Welcome. This is the special live edition of Truth Jihad Radio. I'm Kevin Barrett, doing this live version of the show every Friday evening here on Revolution.radio, the greatest listener-sponsored network in the galaxy. Please, if you are in this galaxy, go to Revolution.radio, subscribe, get access to their amazing archives. Throw in a couple of spare bucks if you can afford it. Keep the alternative media alive. The alternative media is under attack these days. And we just had one of the biggest salvos yet fired at alternative media. Just happened yesterday. Facebook has banned links to Veterans Today, the most read veterans publication in America. You cannot post a link to your favorite VT articles anymore. You will get an error message. It will tell you that it's spam, that it's a dangerous link. The truths you might find by reading Veterans Today are too dangerous for Facebook. And what's even more outrageous is that Facebook has not only stopped us from posting any more links to stories at VT, but they've also apparently deleted the, well, thousands is an understatement, maybe hundreds of thousands of links in the, that people have posted in the past. That is, of the, I forget what the readership is. I think there are, you know, VT gets, what, 10 million hits a year or something? I don't know. Huge number of reads, and just about everybody who reads it, or a lot of them anyway, are sharing the articles on Facebook. So, quite literally, millions of Facebook posts have all just disappeared into a black hole. So this is crazy. It's outrageous. Facebook is a de facto monopoly and therefore a de facto public utility. That means that they have to obey the First Amendment. But they don't. So we're going to have to pick up our torches and pitchforks and storm the gates of their headquarters. One way or another, metaphorically, literally, I don't know. Anyway, let's talk to Gordon Duff. He's the senior editor over at Veterans Today. And Gordon is obviously the guy to talk to about this issue. He's a guy to talk to about a lot of issues. Gordon is quite ridiculously well-informed about a number of things, especially all the so-called deep state-related issues. And it may not be a coincidence that just as Veterans Today has exposed the chemical weapons false flag over in Syria, publishing pictures of the weapons, suddenly Facebook tries to zap VT and send us into a black hole in cyberspace. Gordon, is this a coincidence that, that VT exposes the big poison gas false flag and the next thing you know, millions of links and posts with links are deleted from Facebook and we're completely banned?
Well, specifically, it was done when I asked the Syrian government. The Syrian government told me they had proof. I told him, prove it. That's the whole idea about proof.
Show me. So you're from Missouri.
The Syrian government sent me video of their people entering a poison gas facility. The poison gas facility run by U.S.-backed rebels included a gas concentrator made in 2015 in Kalamazoo, Michigan, by the Hillrom Manufacturing Company, sold through a distributor in Saudi Arabia and transported through Jordan, and concentrated chlorine gas cylinders, which would be chlorine poison gas, manufactured by the Merck Corporation in Germany.
Okay. Now, so we've got pictures and video of this.
The photographs not only included the manufacturer, but included the lot number and each one of the poison gas cylinders manufactured in Germany by Merck had an individual serial number, and these serial numbers were included in the videos, which at last check, when I checked the first time, when the counter on Google hit 12,000 reads, that was after an hour, then it started counting backwards to 10,000, to 9,000, to 8,000. So we figure conservatively maybe 1 million people seen the video, including Bloomberg, The Washington Post, The Hill, Politico, Daily Beast. All have seen these videos that we got from the Syrian government. They're the exact proof. Additionally, there's the other and probably most important aspect, and we have confirmations out of Lebanon on this, that prisoners were captured by Syrian and Russian forces in Ghouta from the nations of primarily at least six British SAS captured in an underground command post, U.S. Army Special Forces, IDF chemical warfare specialists, and Saudi Arabian communications and intelligence officers. We know that the interest group for the country of Oman, which is a former British colony and a country that fronts for British interests in Syria, approached Russian reconciliation officers asking for the return of the SAS prisoners. And they were told they had to negotiate with Syria, or as we say it, go screw yourself. We know Americans are being held. The Americans were being held in a command post directly adjacent to a chemical warfare facility. We now have interview footage of some of the dead that were shown in the videos are interviewed on Russian television. That's being ignored.
So could this actually help explain why the Trump administration, such as it is, seems to be backing off on these crazy threats? You know, Trump was tweeting, the shiny, bright, missiles are coming at you, and then he backed up.
Where this all comes from, essentially, there's a... I've been involved in the negotiations to some extent, just simply because, you know, I have direct connections in Syria because I visit there, and then I have a visit scheduled, as do you. Now, you have a visit scheduled to Iran coming up?
Yeah, it looks like I might be able to make that trip. They're having a commemoration kind of the Palestinian Holocaust, the Nakba. That's in the middle of May. And I have an event here in Wisconsin with Gilad Atzmon that's happening the Thursday before conference in Tehran. Well, so I'm going to be a little late to the conference, but I'll probably still be going to Iran.
Well, I'm talking with the their foreign office right now. I had time to go to the conference. You know, they've rescheduled anyway. But and for those of you out there who don't care about our personal problems, you know, fine. Because Kevin and I, you know,
anyway. Yeah, we can talk off the air about our travel plans.
My deal is in the spring. I normally spend the late spring in Ireland and Scotland. Well, it's still just as cold as hell there, by the way, but. The west coast of Ireland has huge storms in the spring in the Aran Islands. And sitting on the Aran Islands with a lot of warm clothing and watching the sometimes 60-foot waves bang against the cliffs is a religious experience. Oh, my God.
I bet the air is really clean. You know, Irish Spring, it's the symbol of cleanliness.
A lot of salt water, a lot of getting wet, a lot of getting very tired. But it's just absolutely breathtaking. And then I'll spend a week in Scotland and a couple of days in Germany. I've got children and grandchildren there, so I'd be coming back from there.
I don't know how you get into Germany, Gordon. I mean, the people who you actually are a more persuasive advocate of telling the truth about World War II history than a lot of other people, and yet people like my friend Monica Schaefer, she's still in maximum security lockup over there.
Yeah, what's funny? I think about
for making
this,
a video.
You know, I've been working over there now. You know, I've had a I've got a wine importing business in Germany, and I own with the kids a small winery and two wine shops and a little apartment building and a couple other little things. But, you know, real estate in Germany, by the way, Germany does not have the booming economy everywhere people think, and stuff is pretty cheap there. I mean, you know, plus I'm in the social security system. I get about $330 a month from Germany, you know, and free health care. So I want to take advantage of that. And their dental's better than our dental, you know. You get
German dentists, yeah, they're the best.
Yeah, and it's one of the guys. I'm on a local soccer team there. It's an indoor soccer team, which means I don't have to get so tired running back and forth. But it's a great orthopedic surgeon. I'm trying to get him to work on my left knee. But anyway, some of the deal is I agreed I would go to Iran. But I want to meet Zarif while I'm there.
Well, that sounds interesting. Can I be there?
Well, I don't know. You're not on that particular application. But I've asked to see Zarif, so I've been talking to the Foreign Office about that. And the issue, you know, you and I talk sometimes off the cuff, but my background is military and intelligence, not so much cultural activism, and. You know, there are different things I ask. Plus, you know, I deal with Gene all the time. And for those of you who don't know, you know, one of our other editors, along with Kevin, is Gene Khrushchev, who works for Russia's foreign ministry and is former Russian airborne commander in Afghanistan and former first secretary at the Russian embassy in Tehran. And an interesting guy. Gene and I, along with Carol, spent 8 days in Barbados together. Gene and I would get up at 6 a.m. and run, and he can just smoke past me like nothing.
Well, Gordon, the neo-McCarthyite must really be concerned about you hanging around with Russians like Gene.
You know, you and I both get FBI questioned, you know, all the time. They don't seem to generally mind about that stuff anymore. The extent that, you know, when it's down to institutions like the Department of Justice and the FBI, when compared to their relationship to the executive branch or our non-existent Congress, you know, the serious thing we're looking at right now is that other than Bloomberg is probably going to do an article about VT being banned in Facebook, you know, and I sent them a couple of my recent articles that were, let's say, very pointed on the issue of the U.S. false flag, the U.S. involvement, absolute, full and absolute complicity in staging non-existent gas attacks as an excuse. Now, there are two things I can run past you on this, for as motives go. This will be new stuff for you. I know that the Russians and Iranians have spoken about this, that the Trump White House has, through back channels, told Russia that they will back off if Russia could make guarantees that Iranian forces would be removed from Syria.
So this is all being done on behalf of Israel, basically.
Yes. And by the way, that's as secret a thing as you... Well,
secret my ass, man. Anybody who's paying attention can get this from open source intel. Of course,
this is a spoiler alert. It is not open source. This is a real communication, and since it's going out on your disreputable radio show, nobody will pay any attention to it. But it's absolutely true.
Yeah, well, as I said, I could have told you that with or without official secret confirmation.
Well, the point is that it actually was asked. The White House did ask. That is their only condition.
That's
their only condition.
Yeah, you know, when are we going to get an American White House?
There's nothing to do with Israeli White House or gas or anything. It has to do with Israel being terrorized. They're terrified of Iranian forces and Hezbollah. Terrified. Absolutely terrified.
The poor dears. You know, how many hundreds of nuclear weapons do they supposedly have?
Well, the recommendations, and I was on with the Russian Foreign Ministry. I was interviewing someone there, and that hasn't been published yet. And they were asking me, okay, informally, we're sitting on the phone here with, you know, Zarikova and representatives for their foreign minister. And they were asking me, well, Gordon, what would you do? And here's what I suggested. I suggested that I would cut a deal immediately with Lebanon, with the Lebanese army and Hezbollah to supply to Lebanon a credible air defense system, including minimally an S-300 to S-400 system with Pantera S-1 protection, meaning a system that could never be taken out, to end Israeli flyovers or cruise missile flyovers by anyone, U.S., Israel, or anyone, over Lebanese airspace for all time, to end the ever possibility that Israelis would be bombing neighborhoods in Beirut. I remember sitting in an apartment building in Beirut, looking at the building across the street. The entire wall was still missing. People had put netting like you would on the side of a ship. I actually did amphibious landings in Vietnam, and we used to have to crawl down nets just like they did on D-Day. This netting went down the side of a building, I'm thinking 15 stories tall. I'm looking at people's houses, and their kids are eating in a chair leaned up against netting, and they're 8-9 stories in the air. They don't have walls because Israeli bombs took the wall. The walls collapsed.
But yeah. The Israelis have bombed the hell out of Lebanon over and over. They've done that numerous times.
Yeah. And it's, to the rest of the world, it's a joke. I didn't think it was funny. And Lebanon is, I grew up in Detroit, and Detroit is, as Lebanese as anywhere on earth.
Lebanon's Toledo a pretty cool place. Lebanese. Yeah, I mean, Lebanon's got like serious diversity of all kinds of people, and it's also the head of, it's the main Arab publishing base. It's got a great intellectual life.
One of the things I remember doing, I was with Jim and Mike, Jim Dean, Mike Harris, and it's about 10 o'clock at night. We've got Nana with us. She's our bureau chief in Damascus, and I'm over by the American University. Anyway, and we walk over to a restaurant. And we also had with us, by the way, a former CIA director. I won't mention which one, but a former director of the Central Intelligence Agency was with us with his wife. And it's 10 o'clock at night. We're walking probably about half a mile to three quarters of a mile in the streets of Beirut. And there are lots of people, including single women of college age at 10 and 11 o'clock at night, walking the streets in safety by themselves in a way they could never do it in Holland or Grand Haven, Michigan, for instance. It's just, I live in Grand Haven, and which is, not the poorest place on earth, but the chances of you surviving walking the streets here and probably not so good. Berlin, you wouldn't last 5 minutes, certainly not in Paris, not anymore anyway. Paris used to be a lot different.
Yeah, it all depends who. But, I remember when I first got interested in the Middle Eastern stuff a long time ago, there were two very attractive young women who were talking about how they'd spent a couple of years hitchhiking all over the Arab world. And they said they had no problem whatsoever in Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, the Middle East, no problems ever. Little bit of problems over in the Maghreb and Algeria and Morocco, but much worse problems in places like Spain, Italy, and the Balkans. The Arab Muslim culture is actually pretty respectful of women and pretty protective. And if it hasn't been trashed the way we've been trashing it over the past, since 9/11, it probably would be even better.
Yeah, generally, pretty much any American could fly into Beirut, and once you've got through a Byzantine airport security system, nothing as bad as the one in Jordan. You'll find hotels at 40% less than the U.S., restaurants 70% less, and food 60% better than anything you've had anywhere. And a country little too much traffic, overly filled with stuff to see and do. Lebanon's nice, but Lebanon politically, you know, it's nice people, but politically it is a monstrosity because the diversity in Lebanon has pretty much eliminated any possibility of political cohesiveness.
Too much diversity. Maybe Trump's right. Maybe we need to build a wall.
Well, it's Lebanon was really a French colony, you know, and I was out in the Bekaa, you know, we were looking at the Roman ruins at Baalbek, which, by the way, are a better visit than Rome. And if you can get out there, you've got to get the right cab driver. But visiting Tyre and Baalbek, if you're an antiquities person, would be way, way up your list, along with Ephesus and Turkey and, you know, a few places in North Africa that are very surprising. I would have mentioned Palmyra in Syria, but it's a little late to genuinely appreciate that. A little too much damage has been done.
Yeah, didn't ISIS kind of mess with that a little bit?
Yeah, ISIS, you know,
Israeli Secret Intelligence Services.
And if only that were a joke. But
while you're doing your tourism stuff in Lebanon, Gordon, just don't try to post any pretty pictures on Facebook that mention Veterans Today.
Well, kind of the other thing, other thing here though, is I've always thought there was something wrong with Facebook. The basic concept of I started out on the internet in the early 90s on AOL in a military veteran site there, run by the History Channel. And that's really where VT came from. As early as 93 is where the base group of people came together. So we're really 25 years old this year, if we take the real roots down to Dave Hackworth and Chief Warrant Officer Ed Nichols, who had all-time L.A. cop. He had gone through the police academy with Joseph Wombo. For those who know such things, you know, if you haven't, we could look up who that is. Malachi Martin, former Jesuit, came with us early on.
The famous exorcist who actually, you know.
Father Marin, as you guys know.
He got rid of demons.
Chief exorcist of the Catholic Church. Author of Vatican II. Irish Jesuit. Periodically exercised from the church itself at times. Mm-hmm. I met him when he was driving a cab. And someone we now believe was murdered. And that's another issue for another day and another time. But the idea of Facebook, we knew the algorithms were running all along. We knew they were collecting political information. We knew they were profiling voters. We knew other than the fact that Facebook and Google were tossing ads, you know, you do a search for something and the next thing every page you look on has got an ad for that coming on and every email somebody's, and people are suddenly calling you on the telephone trying to sell you something you searched accidentally or a word you typed in, and God help you if you typed in the wrong word. But, it was never that innocent. Back in 2015, I was in Egypt, and we were presenting to Egypt as part of one of our companies. In this case, it was, American Defense Solutions. It's one of the Delaware companies owned by Adamus, anyway.
You and your shell companies, Gordon, man.
Oh, yeah. Years ago I went to work for a set of companies owned by the governing families of the United Arab Emirates. The Emirates had decided that they needed a more vigorous, independent defense policy free of Saudi Arabia.
Well, that's a concept. Whatever happened to that?
But a couple of islands in the Straits of Hormuz had been seized by Revolutionary Guards, and the between that and, as you know, a certain Palestinian was murdered in a hotel room in Dubai. So right. Those two issues more or less put a feather or a bee in the bonnet of Sheikh Al Maktoum, that the sovereignty of his kingdom had been pushed on the back burner, not just by Israel, but by pretty much everyone else, that people would just traipse in and out of Abu Dhabi and Dubai to do whatever the hell they pleased.
Well, didn't those Mossad assassins not even have to really bother to cover their tracks when they went and killed that guy?
Not even hardly. So they asked me to come over and take a look at their security system, along with a group mostly of French and British. You know, they were never that close to Americans. And set up a security company. And then at that time was BTC Controls and 4C Controls, made up of people that we pulled out of Thales Corporation, which is the French defense conglomerate that owns Airbus. And the idea is that they wanted to have their own space program. They wanted their own satellites. They wanted a stronger position with Europe rather than the U.S. For those who don't know, Dubai's got a big American naval base there. Nobody ever mentions it, but there's always a carrier parked there. And it's not necessarily a great feeling for them. And then there's this other issue with Saudi Arabia behind them, where the Saudis use Dubai as their resident whorehouse. What they can't do in Saudi Arabia, they do in Dubai. And it's not appreciated that it's a place for bad behavior. And I will avoid mentioning the specific hotels and the armies of Ukrainian whores that are brought in there by the Israelis.
This is maybe how the Israelis and the Saudis got to be such good friends.
Oh, they've been good friends. I've traced it back to 1972, and I'm thinking I've got others who tell me it goes back centuries. You know,
And Are you talking about the Don May thing?
There are similar relationships with the Persians in Iran as well. That you know, when Iran talks Iran and Russia talks Russia, you have to realize that both nations have a very strong Jewish presence, which expresses in a number of things. It can be you know, Jewish culture, but it can also be Zionist politics, or it can be underground terror cells and interference in their government operations.
And organized crime. Let's not forget that.
So it's one thing, you've got a Jewish family somewhere, and this is the, you know, the Hitler stuff we talk about. When you pick up a cab driver and his kids and you send him to a labor camp somewhere, you know, to and then to die of typhus at the end of the war, that's the Holocaust. Yeah, that's as I see it, that was the Holocaust. And that is a horrible thing. And I don't care if it was 1 or 6 million. Or I could use the official math from the Jewish Virtual Library, that in the areas that Germany was to, those areas that were to fall under Germany's control in World War II, there were 4.3, and this is as a German citizen, mind you. So I am obligated to stay with the party line on this and or go to prison, you know, like so many of your other friends have.
Yeah, so you could probably be, you know, in the next cell down from Monica Schaefer.
Yeah. And I don't have to do that because I tell the truth and she lies. And this is the truth, people. There were 4.3 million Jews in Europe, and we're talking Europe east of the Ural Mountains, you know, the whole of Europe.
No, west of the Ural Mountains.
Yeah, west of the Ural Mountains, sorry, yeah. West of the Ural Mountains. And 6 million of them were gassed to death in camps of the 4.3 million. And at the end of the war, 3.8 million of them survived. That's just the simple truth. And if you don't like the math on that, screw you.
Well, let me quickly correct one more thing you said, which is I don't know if Monica Schaefer has lied. I'm sure she hasn't consciously lied. And her video, "Sorry, Mom, I was wrong about the Holocaust," doesn't strike me as something that should land her in maximum security prison.
Well, I'm just saying 6 million Jews died in the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. That 4.3 million Jews lived there. 6 million of the 4.3 million were killed. And 3.8 million of them survived.
Here, let me pull out my pocket calculator, Gordon.
No, it's just...
I tried counting on my fingers, and I had to get my shoes.
I'm a German mathematics to a... That's mathematics to a German. So when I stop my Opel at a gas station, I've got a 12-gallon tank in my little Opel Corsa, and I have a half a tank of gas in it, and I put 16 gallons of fuel in it, and I have three quarters of a tank. German math. It's how everything is done.
Thomas Friedman would say, yeah. Yep. Well, you certainly haven't violated any German law because, as you said, six million out of those 4.3 million did
Germany
die in the Holocaust.
Yeah. We've written Maxwell's equations. There's Newtonian physics have changed. Everything's been rewritten there. Reality in Germany is a subjective reality. It's law. It's the law of Kafka. And
for some reason, Gordon, even though you're the one saying this, I would have to go back and dig out my sources and look up these numbers and think
you'd
about
find
it.
Find those numbers from the Jewish Virtual Library online.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Remember that specifically, the Jewish Virtual Library. That's where they really come from.
Well, Gordon, you realize that I was I was banned from the radio station in Portland a few months back, and then I just apparently am going to be banned again from the Left Forum in New York City because they call me a Holocaust denier, and yet I've never expressed certainty about these issues anywhere.
And you understand, like you, I get invited on everything.
You just waltz through Germany and, I don't know, maybe we could try to get you.
Have you ever thought of me as a Christ-like figure?
Frankly, let me think. At certain moments you've had physical problems, joint problems, PTSD, you've suffered and you've kind of stood up for a certain amount of truth. And so, all of us have a little bit of that kind of thing in us and you may be more than most.
Well, think about this. I run VT. Look at the world today. What is the cleanest publication in the world today? What is it?
The cleanest?
The cleanest.
I have no idea what you're referring to.
You don't think VT is the freest speech, the cleanest publication in the world today?
Clean in that sense. Sure. I mean, I think that it is total free speech. And by and large, our stuff runs rings around the competition, which may be one reason that Google and now Facebook, I mean, together, Google and Facebook pretty much.
Let me go back to that Egypt story where we were 16 minutes and 43 seconds ago. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So in 2015, I was asked to go to Egypt because Egypt was interested in monitoring social media. And what they wanted to do is they wanted to get software that would take Facebook, that would intercept all Google searches, and this is with cooperation of Google Corporation, would work an algorithm where they could identify influencers, politically active people, groups, where they could find who connected to who through Gmail, through Skype, through Microsoft Corporation, who talked to who, tie that to an Israeli phone tapping system to find out who used telephone, who used WhatsApp, by the way, which they monitored also, and of course Facebook. So that if one person talked to one person, they could build networks of communities of who had talked to who, had talked to who, had talked to who, and had polluted them with certain beliefs that the government there was uncomfortable with. Yeah. Now, the software...
9/11 skepticism, for example?
The software I picked up, I was allowed to download into my personal computer the software used by the Central Intelligence Agency and use it, which is, we'll say, not that classified. Now, what I learned is that the exact software that operates the Google algorithms has long been sold to investment houses, Ford Motor Company, consumer companies of all kind, that the commercial need developed the capability from the commercial side with all of the programming capabilities of the computer hellholes of South Asia. You know, cheap programmers, lots of talent, way too much curiosity, and nobody seeing the connotations of what too much information processing, what connecting too many dots does. So in rather than having governments create this 1984 or Kafkaesque or whatever terminology you want to use that abuses abuses our language with its overuse anyway, we find that commercial applications exceeded anything that the CIA could have used, and all they simply did was take commercial software and applied it to their basic needs, and they found that the same thing where Ford Motor Company wanted to identify Chevy truck owners and how Chevy truck owners interacted with Dodge truck owners is now how people are identified based on their politics and gun ownership and their leftist ideas or whether they are Holocaust deniers or whatever. They just changed the word Holocaust and pickup truck, and they had it all handed to them because all of it was there. And frankly, the full software packages that are used to monitor your email, and I mean every email you send, every phone call you make that goes over the internet. Now remember, most telephone, well, if you wonder why, for instance, if this were 30 years ago and you're making a long-distance call in Intralata, you know, that's a town 20 miles away but a different area code, you're paying 40 cents a minute, okay? And now...
I remember those days.
Yeah, you got a phone in your house and you're wondering, hey, there's no long distance. Why do I even use an area code? I'm in 616. I got a 419 phone. Nobody seems to care. You got a 419 phone. You live in Ohio? No, I just kept the phone number. It didn't matter. Nobody cares. They don't care because all of your phone calls are going over the internet. Well, I'm just frankly telling you that everything you are saying on the internet, Google is hearing every single word of every phone call you make, and everyone is being cataloged. And you are being cataloged politically. And when you open your email, or you do a search, or you interact in any way, the information you receive is designed to create in you feelings of hopelessness, to make you feel unempowered, dependent. What essentially is being looked for here is to keep you politically inactive. They want you saying, well, I don't care, both political parties are the same. They don't want you asking any questions. You know, the basic questions mean we can ask constitutional questions. Well, every time we have an election, we end up with two candidates, and I don't know where either one of them came from. Well, I can tell you where they came from, but you don't have to ask, and you don't even have to ask me. But Kevin could tell you where they come from, but you don't really want to know anyway. If you wanted to know what the Electoral College is and why it was put in the Constitution, if you think it was to make you free and have a president elected by the people of the United States, you're technically insane. If you've never wondered why Delaware or Wyoming, where nobody lives, has two senators, and yet the Constitution has what's called an equal protections provision. If you think the Second Amendment really protects gun owners, if you think the Constitution really, really protects you from a central bank with clear language, you're reading too much into it. Mm-hmm. If you think the Constitution was all that friggin' good, just remember that the Bill of Rights was an afterthought.
Well, yeah, it was an afterthought right to, that was forced through by the anti-federalists who were actually right about these
the
things.
The federalists were perfectly happy not only to have no civil rights at all. They were left out entirely. The federalists, when they got done with the Constitution and overthrew the founding fathers, and the federalists, by my estimation, were agents of the Rothschilds, but you know, that's because I'm obviously a crazy Jew.
My great-great-grandfather
said that.
Alexander Hamilton was definitely one of those guys.
But the Constitution essentially created a country that had way less rights than 14th-century Britain had. Magna Carta went way, way further. For common Brits, not just the barons, mind you, that went after King John, Runnymede on the Thames, but the Constitution, which eliminated the Articles of Confederation, eliminated the freedoms and protections of the Articles of Confederation of individual rights. We went way back. We went most of the way back the Constitution by creating this balance of power where a Supreme Court, the Supreme Court is nominated by a president, elected by an electoral college of people. We have no idea who they are. And then is confirmed by a Senate that until 1911 was chosen from among the moneyed landowning class by state legislators who were themselves not subject to election, but actually chosen at landowning conferences.
That's right. Remember, though, there was a states were the state. The word state, of course, means the government, the governing entity. And prior to the Civil War, people still were more or less under the impression that it was a union of equal states, and the feds were kind of in the backseat. But the Constitution,
with the exception, of course, the Constitution allowed the Northeast, which was control of the City of London banks, to economically subjugate the South to the same kind of sanctions the U.S. is using on Venezuela. That's what caused the Civil War. But you know, in 1861, the North went to war against the South to free the slaves in 1863. I mean, but only free the slaves in the South, not anywhere else.
I saw a Steven Spielberg movie that explained to me how that worked. Speaking of which,
Do you know it's the same thing as the Holocaust math? You do understand that, right? That
we're doing. Yeah. Spielberg can clear that up for you too.
Yeah. I do appreciate that. I love watching E.T. You know, I tear right up, you know, every time I see the little kid on the bicycle, you know.
So do you think Spielberg gave us an accurate picture of the E.T. issue, given that you supposedly have had some MJ-12 type clearances and you've interacted with that world?
I'm saying that. Oh God, you know, this is 2009. I went on the radio about this and I got burned for doing that. The official documents, if we're going to go into that area, what is supposed to be a governmental organization like, very, very much like something out of X-Files, larger than any government, bigger than, you know, a super governmental organization that works with alien civilizations, okay? Now, there are documents and treaties and committees that exist. And then there are supposedly specialized people who meet with aliens and stuff like that. I don't meet with aliens, you know?
But you've heard about this.
Yeah. It's like reading it in an email. It's like reading about George Soros, how he's... Here's a classic thing I went through with Steve Robertson, but I also went through this with an Iranian diplomat today. You know, one of these things where somebody who'd gone to Harvard for 8 years, and he knows because he may even be listening tonight. But we were having a talk about how he came to hate Hillary Clinton and how he said, well, you know, Trump's in and he hates us and he's probably going to have us bombed into the Stone Age, but at least he's not crooked Hillary Clinton, because Hillary Clinton is supported by George Soros. And George Soros, of course, is the most vicious pro-Zionist Jew in the world, and she owns Hillary Clinton. And I'm thinking, I go back to 2003, and I pull up a headline from the New York, or a full-page ad from the New York Times, financed by George Soros, that accuses George W. Bush of invading Iraq on behalf of Israel, and that he says he's a puppet of the Zionists.
Well, Soros would have gone one step further like Jimmy Walter and put those full-page ads in about 9/11. I would really respect him. As it is, I only kind of half respect that.
Well, the point being is that George Soros is the primary financier of anti-Zionism in the world and the single most hated individual other than Kevin Barrett. No, I'm hated. Hey,
wow.
Kevin, am I hated more than you are or not?
I sometimes it's hard to tell, but, you know, they're banned.
When you found me higher up the hated list than you, how did that make you feel?
Oh, I figured I better work harder.
I know. I mean, it's like a challenge. But it's a very simple point. If George Soros is the primary financial backer of the Clintons, okay, and Hillary Clinton, corrupt Hillary, is the one who came forward, the only one in Washington who has ever come forward, other than John Kennedy a few months before his killing, and talked about a vast conspiracy in Washington. The only other person of any repute who's mentioned that is Hillary Clinton.
Now, wait a second. Hillary talked about a vast right-wing conspiracy, whereas Kennedy was talking about a vast, ostensibly communist conspiracy.
No. Kennedy was talking about a vast conspiracy based on secrecy within the United States, and that specialized organizations within the U.S., within the right in the U.S., not the communists, but not the left, but within the right, that groups involved in cults, groups involved in conspiracy. Exact opposite of what you have.
Well, those were the people who killed Kennedy, so you know, you could be right, but Kennedy spoke it when he said it in a way.
I did put this in an article. You never read my stuff.
No, I've read this. I know what you're talking about.
You sit at a lemonade stand all day selling your books. You're not reading other people's stuff.
I've been challenged by people on this, Gordon. I've stood up for you on this issue and told people that no, Kennedy was talking about this kind of conspiracy that we're talking about. But what they tell me is that, well, no, he appeared to be talking about the typical, you know, the communist conspiracy.
There are two things. There are the excerpts from his speech or his speech in entirety. Now, you may have the time at some point here, but if you want to actually pull up the text, I did put it in an article 2 days ago. I brought up 5 bullet points, but I linked to the text in its entirety. And one of the things that's important to do when dealing with the Constitution or speeches made by people is to begin looking at context, because so much of what people grab onto, they tend to bend the intent of. It was very clear, however, with Kennedy. Kennedy mostly talked about, he was talking about the U.S. and the danger of secret societies, of secrecy.
Yes.
The primary thing I believe he was talking about was Skull and Bones.
Interesting. Yep.
Beyond that, the Freemasons.
Mm-hmm. So he and Anthony Sutton were barking up the same tree.
Well, this is that period of time. You know, there was a time when, you know, right now there's this thing here where the internet is filled with people who bark around talking about the great Jewish conspiracy and how we have to protect the white race. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, they talk about how Donald Trump's going to save us with his Jewish family and his utter and absolute slavish adherence
Most of these people don't. They not only hate Jews, but they hate blacks. They hate Muslims most of all. So yeah, I'm not too impressed by those people.
Yet at the same time, those same people where we get all of the offensive Jewish hating language. You know, it's these things. There's this thing about expectations. For those of us who grew up in the 50s and 60s, I got a couple of years on you. I grew up in a, you know, mixed German, Irish, and Jewish family. The expectation of a Jewish family essentially is that you expected social consciousness, you expected,
Education,
Jewish uncles. Okay. First thing they come to Gordon, you've got to remember this. Whatever you do, if you get a job, you also have to have a business. And to have a business, you have to have a product or a service that you can sell, something you can fall back on all the time. And if your business goes out of business, you never stop, you never give up, you start again. And you never forget. And this is Yiddish culture, not this fake Jewish Hebrew culture, and it's all fake, the Ashkenazi culture. Mm-hmm. But it was based on the Yiddish language, Yiddish theater. Henny Youngman.
There's a lot of great stuff out of that culture. The comedy, the entertainment. Hollywood has a lot of schlock, but it also has good stuff.
And charm of an urban culture. But this wasn't a superior urban culture. It was a German urban culture. Yiddish is Yiddish is really Berlinish. It's low German. It's the less formal street German. And to Germans who have a bad attitude, it was sometimes called gutter German. But we all learned to speak Yiddish. Everybody in Germany learned to speak Yiddish, a little bit of Russian and Polish. It all came with the family. You know, my dad would scream. He'd go from one to the other in the middle of a sentence. And then he'd break into a Ukrainian dialect at times. And the tough one is growing up in Detroit, was trying to deal with a huge Hungarian population because nobody could speak Hungarian.
Right. So these are all basically European, white immigrants in the U.S. And these people who hate Jews as a blanket category don't seem to get that.
Are the people that didn't grow up
with
what began the labor movement? They grew up with, in this case, the labor movement fought to provide equal opportunity for education, quality public schools, decent public streets, a court system that wasn't entirely run by the rich, a democratic system where, in Michigan, for instance, with the way we were set up, there were rural counties with two cows in the Upper Peninsula that had more votes in the legislature than the entire city of Detroit. Detroit grew up, this is where I grew up, 1701. It was a French city. My family moved there in 1780 as, Scottish fur traders, and high binders, whatever, married into the French family. But as it went on, it became an Irish city, and through the 1820s to 1870s, largely a German city. After that, Henry Ford brought in Hungarians to run his factories because they were great workers. We developed Hungarian neighborhoods and then very, very large Polish and Russian neighborhoods. And it built an ungodly wonderful city, a beautiful city of churches, a city of diversity. The city, had a small Chinatown. It picked up an Hispanic population. And then by the early 20th century, it began picking up an Islamic population, Chaldean Christians initially, and then an Islamic population later, and then a large Jewish population. And all of this in Detroit, and as businesses and cultural organizations came together, they were always at the table together, the Chaldeans, the Muslims, the Jews, the Germans, the Hungarians, the Poles.
Gordon, you sound like a dangerous multiculturalist.
I hate that.
No wonder Facebook won't let you talk. Yeah, well, you know, censored by Google, censored by Facebook, censored by YouTube, by your
dangerous command. I'm too American.
You're too all-American for them. They can't handle it. Well, thank you so much. Gordon Duff, senior editor of the band Censored Veterans Today, which soldiers on. And please help us soldier on. Share veteranstoday.com everywhere you can. Maybe write the word God in there if you put it on Facebook. All right. Well, thanks, Gordon. I'll be back in the next hour with James Hufford, the historian from Iowa. So stick around, folks. And take care, Gordon. See you next time. Support revolution.radio, please do so, or subscribe, or go to truthjihad.com and keep this particular show rolling. All right, well, let's get down to business here. We have another great guest, and we got him. There he is, James Hufford. James Hufford is a historian, lives in Iowa. He is well known for his 9/11 truth activism. And specifically, he has the website 911grassroots.org, which has gotten pretty good traffic over the years. So, hey, let's talk about it. Welcome, James Hufford. What's happening? And how's the alternative media going, man? We're getting banned and censored and pushed off of Facebook. And you're keeping 911 Grassroots going strong.
Well, I'm working at it. Our website has surpassed the 1 million page view mark today. In our 1 million page views in the history of the website is surpassed today. So
congratulations.
I'm kind of happy about that.
You're a millionaire.
I wish, you know.
If every page view was a dollar, you would be.
Well, yeah, you bet. If, you know, there's always that if involved, though. So far, well, I'm sort of waiting for some one of these billionaire patrons to come along and reward me. But so far, I'm just doing it on my own, just on my own time and not getting the dime out of it.
Well, let's talk about how you got into this. You're a PhD historian. You're an expert on the nation of Brazil. And then somewhere along the line, as a patriotic American and a good citizen, you noticed that the official story of 9/11 not only didn't add up, but it was a complete load of hooey. And so you're living in Iowa. I think by then maybe you were not teaching anymore. So tell us a little bit how you got involved in the 9/11 truth movement, when and what you did.
Well, I have to give Barry Zwicker credit because it was reading his original early book. I think it came out
Towers
about
of Deception.
Yes. What,
Towers
2003?
Of Deception, the media cover-up of 9/11. That's a great book.
Yeah, and that was my first read in the 9/11 truth, and he had me as soon as I read it, but I didn't do anything about it for several years. I don't know why. I can't explain it. I can't defend it. But
you were probably finally paralyzed with angst.
Well, I don't know. I just thought that, like, I think that personally that the reason that Americans generally don't react strongly against a lot of the what you call hooey that's going on, that's been going on for years and years in this country with our, in quotation marks, government, is that people feel helpless. They don't feel that. They may know, but they don't feel they can do anything about it anyway. And I guess
that's what Gordon Duff says. That's exactly how they want us to feel. In fact, Gordon said in the first hour that they're tweaking the algorithms so that they can study each of us individually and learn about what makes us tick by looking at what we do on the internet. And then they can figure out how to put out information to us that will specifically make us feel helpless and disempowered. Well, now that
absolutely.
Is
absolutely all of our attitudes as a herd, which is how they look at us, are engineered. Absolutely, that's the case. But getting back to how I got involved, one day, I think it was a Sunday back in about August 2007, I was thinking about 9/11, and I'd heard of the 9/11 Truth organization started by Janice Matthews and some other people.
9/11truth.org.
I looked that up and I found the grassroots organizers list that my website, 911grassroots.org, actually contains now. I superintend that list, but I looked on it and I saw there was one person in Iowa that was on the list, and of course, it gives contact information for activists. And so I gave him a call, and he encouraged me. I said, I'm thinking, he was clear over in Davenport over on the river, and I was thinking, well, you know, we need something in central Iowa, and maybe I could do that. You know, maybe I could start a group. And so I called him, and he encouraged me, and he told me I had to call Janice Matthews, and I did, and she encouraged me, and she gave me some tips on how to, you know, begin a meeting and so on. And we started we had our first monthly meeting on September 10th, 2007. And we've met monthly every month since then, except one month we were wiped out by the weather. But other than that, we've had a meeting every single month since September 10th, 2007.
That's pretty good.
And we've gotten away a little bit from our, total concentration on 9/11 to look at related issues and stuff. But we've always met. And that's how I got involved. And then in 2010, I found out through Janice that she was going to drop the grassroots aspect of her website of 911truth.org. And I said, well, that's the core of what you got. I said, you can't do that. And she said, well, she was burned out on it, and she was trying to get somebody to take it over. She said she had been for about 3 years. And I said, well, if I had any technical ability to run a website, I'd take it over. And she said, well, it's yours. And she got me a separate website all set up. And I took over the list, and I started something that I had encouraged her to do, but she never picked up on it. She thought it'd be too divisive, and that was to put out an opinion piece periodically, and which I wrote myself, and I still continue every 2 or 3 weeks, which is about as fast as I can come up with, and you know, come up with a good theme and develop it to write an article. And so I post my own articles every 2 to 3 years, and those, or every 2 to 3 weeks, I should say. Right. And those have been the kind of the core of the website, and until about a year and a half ago when I started to post some other articles, a few other articles here and there from alternative media, and I started to pick up, of course, a lot more traffic because once people had read my article, well, there wasn't anything else much posted for a while, and so why would they keep coming back? But if there were new articles along, they'd come and read those. And I found out that the more I posted, the more traffic I got, and traffic numbers, viewer numbers just exploded up to a high in, I believe it was August or September of 2016, of almost 80,000 a month, and then my computer crashed and I was down for about a month and did a little traveling, and when I came back I started very, very low at about 3,000 a month again, and build it back up to now. It's up to, let's see, last month I believe was 3,800, yesterday was the highest new total, one day total, which was more than 1,800 in one day, and
oh, that's pretty good.
You know, we're on the rise again. And what I do, I like to think that, well, I go to all of the alternative websites. I subscribe to all the mailing lists and so on. I get them all in my mailbox, and I go to them and I search out the what I call the cream of the cream, and I post up to about 50 to 60 articles a day, and that keeps people coming. And I'm surprised. I don't know of anybody else in the world, actually, that does this. I imagine that there are listings of alternative articles somewhere, but if there are, I don't know of them, and I don't imagine probably almost nobody in the general interested public knows of them.
Actually, there are a few. Yours, 911grassroots.org, is definitely one of the go-to sites for alt media digest stuff. We do a certain amount of that at Veterans Today as well. But happened is very popular, and Citizens for Legitimate Government does a real good job too. There may be a few more, but these are the ones that really pop to my mind.
Yeah, but I don't know of any way with that anyone with limited time, which I guess is what we all have, limited time in a day, can really keep track of what it's, as nearly as possible, of what is really going on in the world.
It's False Flag Weekly News, because every week we choose from maybe 35 to sometimes as many as 50 stories from that week, which we think are the most important or revealing ones to discuss. So every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Central, 11 a.m. Eastern, for an hour on nolizeradio.org, we go over these 35, 40, 45 most important stories of the week. So that's another place where people could go for a digest of what's going on. Grassroots.
Sure, and you give analysis, but I mean, on a day-to-day basis, if somebody wants to keep track of something that just happened or is just happening or in many different fields, I mean, I post articles that have to do with the medical advances and scientific discoveries and, you know, space and all sorts of things that, other than just raw news. But
yeah. Well, it's a great resource. And this is what the alternative media is best at, kind of interfacing between these different alternative media platforms and producing better material overall, at least for those willing to put some energy into it, than the mainstream does. And the alternative narratives have chipped away at the mainstream narratives so much that it's become a national security.
Have destroyed it would be the proper word.
Yeah. Well, yes and no. I mean, there are still folks out there who more or less accept or at least don't argue with the mainstream narratives of this or that. But I don't think Trump ever would have been elected if people still accepted mainstream narratives. And, you know, Trump is such a loose cannon. And he's, you know, said so many things that totally counter to mainstream conceptions of things. Not all of them are right. In some cases, the mainstream, I think, is more accurate than Trump. Yeah. But in any case, no, a loose cannon like
Trump.
Well,
in certain instances, I suppose, and it's kind of, he's a combination of somebody that really wants to crash the system and bring in better government, but the way that he goes at it is pretty unfortunate, really. And I guess probably this current deal with hitting Syria is probably as good an example of that as anything. I mean, he's horrible advisors have been foisted on him that represent the system that he was elected to sweep aside, to do away with. And that's
right. That doesn't sure even really understands that. You know, he's comes from makes, a particular background.
Well, it makes it's you a, wonder if anybody could achieve what he set out to do, which was honorable. He maybe wasn't the best person in the world to do it in some respects, but in other respects, it would take someone really thick-skinned and determined to have even a chance
Jesse Ventura would have done it right. Trump, being a mobbed-up con man, you know, who may have some good instincts, but also some very bad instincts, such as the whole reason he threw his hat in the ring was because he hated the Iran deal. He basically wanted Israel to push the U.S. into war on Iran for Israel. Of course, he probably didn't think of it that way. He's just getting bad advice from his kosher Nostra bosses.
Well, his Zionist buddies. I still can't fathom his fixation with the Zionists and just following their advice, just doing what Netanyahu wants him to do all the time. I can't understand that. But I think that there's a lot more behind the scenes to that than we know of. For instance, with Bolton coming in, it's been pointed out that he's Adelson's man, and Adelson, without Adelson, Trump's funds evaporate. So that's at least.
Yeah, and that's all really, really bad sign.
Really bad time. You're right.
Yeah. But sometimes it seems like these pro-war deep state elements are pressuring Trump to try to push him away from his America First agenda towards a war agenda.
Absolutely, toward a more of a globalist agenda, and that is what he was elected to combat, to sweep out of the government.
And they kind of got him up against the wall now, you know, with Mueller raiding his lawyers' offices and Comey coming out with a book saying terrible things about Trump. And, you know, the New York Times and Washington Post are beating Trump up every single day in their headlines. And then when Trump does something really bellicose, like, you know, threatening to bomb the hell out of Syria, it looks like the mainstream backs off a little bit. I mean, it almost looks like the supposed liberals in the mainstream media who are beating up on Trump are doing so on behalf of a warmongering deep state that doesn't like Trump, not for the many good reasons to not like Trump, but for the one bad reason, which is that Trump, his instincts are to stick with trying to rebuild America rather than fighting stupid wars around the world for Israel and other special interests.
Yeah, well, I jumped on, not with both feet, but I jumped on the liberal bandwagon back when liberalism meant broad-mindedness and accepting everybody that Ezekiel and that sort of thing, and you know, peace rather than war, and all those things that I don't believe that what's called liberal and left wing now is genuine at all. That's not what it is. It's more like fascism.
And yeah, it's identity politics for the most part.
Yeah, it's identity politics, and I don't know. I mean, it just like about 2015, 2016, just suddenly those forces were able to take over the party, the George Soros type of people.
Well,
and
here's
so
where, you know, we heard some words of defense for George Soros from Gordon Duff in the first hour. Gordon points out that George Soros, far from being an agent of Israeli nationalism, is hated by the hardline Israelis more than anybody, and that Soros was putting full-page ads in the New York Times in 2003 saying, don't go to war for Israel in Iraq. And Soros, you know, he contributes to some good causes as well as some bad causes, and he may be destabilizing some of these, you know, countries on the border of Russia. He may be involved in some color revolutions, and that would be to his discredit.
Well, maybe, but
he isn't Netanyahu.
He seems to be, anyway, trying. You never know whether somebody's really doing what they seem to be doing anymore, but he seems to be trying to wash away every nation state and just bring in floods of immigrants to cloud things and cause chaos and you know, that's definitely what we don't need.
You're talking about Europe or the U.S. or, you know, because when did your ancestors come to the U.S.?
Well, I'm talking about Europe, but the U.S., they're trying to do the same thing here, open borders and so on, and the sanctuary cities and so on.
Wait a minute, James. You're a historian, so let's be historical here. What's the percentage of immigrants compared to the native population? Let's run those numbers from, let's say, 1800 up through today and see what's the percentage each year of the number of immigrants who come to the United States as opposed to the native population. And I would guess that those numbers have held fairly steady over 200 years. I would guess that today you might be talking of floods of immigrants, but I would be surprised if the percentage of immigrants coming into the United States compared to the native population is any higher today than it was in, let's say, 1845, 1870.
Well, there were high points, yes. There were high points, but
well, so this, so what's the big deal? We're a nation
now,
of immigrants. We always have been. We still are. So what?
Well, a lot of the immigrants that are trying to, I would say, sponsored now to come in are people that are ill suited to succeed in this country or in
Europe. That's
what
they
Europe.
Always said. When my Irish ancestors came over here, the Irish people were considered like the ghetto, you know, the total, you know,
well,
ghetto.
I know how they were considered, but they were Western Europeans and there's nothing in my mind that's superior at all about Western Europeans, but they fit the existing population. They were their traditions and customs and folklore and beliefs.
Are you kidding?
Have you seen
Scorsese's film Gangs of New York?
Well, no, I know, and Catholics were considered to be
they were the enemy. I mean, they were just as, you know, Catholics were considered just as non-mainstream as Muslims are today.
I know they were considered that way, but they were about 2% difference, whereas now you have people coming in that are maybe comparatively 25% different, but they were.
I don't agree.
For the day, they
seemed
different.
Why that's not
because,
true, James. That's not true.
Because there wasn't anybody else like them in this country.
Very few. Today, the world has grown together quite a bit. Most of the world is relatively.
Let me talk for a second.
The same information is available to everybody all over the world. The world has grown more alike. So today, let's say an educated person, a college graduate from the United States, let's say the Midwestern United States, has a lot in common with a college graduate from the West Coast, has a lot in common with a college graduate from Mexico City, has a lot in common with a college graduate from London, from Paris, and from Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, and from Lebanon, and from Russia, and from China.
Okay, let me ask you a question.
Than the Catholic and the Protestant had in 1860.
All right. Now let me ask you a question. How many illegal immigrants have college educations? Are you there?
Yeah, the illegal ones may not be very educated, but the
legal immigrants, that's what we're talking about. I have nobody that I know of is against legal immigration. I don't know of anybody that's against
it. I'm actually at least as much against the legal as the illegal, because the legal immigrants are brain draining the rest of the world. The best people from underdeveloped countries that need those smart people are losing the smart people because they're coming here because they can make more
true.
Money.
But the poor people need to come here to survive.
So we should actually be opening our borders more for the poor people, which is what the Statute of Liberty
says.
That's
true, although I think that intelligence is more fungible than people realize, and those people can I think you're right that we shouldn't try to brain drain the rest of the world. But on the other hand, a countervailing argument would be that intelligence and educability is fungible, and those countries can certainly educate other people that didn't have the opportunity to before, and give them the opportunity for an education and be as well off as they were before.
Okay, that sounds like a plan. So I was just trying to pull your chain a little bit so we could have a bit of a interesting, lively discussion. And we got a call in now, a call in from my friend Rolf, who's always good for some kind of lively discussion. So let's see if we can succeed in bringing him up. He would actually be on your side on this issue. He's a big Trump supporter, actually. And,
hello.
Hey, there he is. Let him speak for himself. Hey, Rolf, how you doing?
Hello, this is Rolf, a big Trump supporter.
Trump supporter, Rolf.
So tell me.
I'm about half on your side, so go ahead.
He's busy draining the swamp right now.
So James Hufford, you're kind of a lukewarm Trump supporter,
I'm a Trump supporter on domestic, but not on foreign policy.
Gotcha. Okay, and I'm a Trump skeptic. So Rolf, tell me what's going on. Is the deep state pressuring Trump to try to get him to bomb Syria? Is that why they're coming after him with Comey's book and coming after him with Mueller's investigation and raiding his lawyer and so on? It seems to me every time that Trump backs off on Syria, he says we're getting out real soon, boom, suddenly they up the ante. And if Trump does or says something bellicose, they back off on him. It's almost as if these so-called liberals running the New York Times and Washington Post are actually hawks in disguise who are trying to push Trump into wars. Am I crazy?
No, you're perfectly sane. It's amazing how, Trump says he wants to leave Syria, and the next thing you know, there's another gas attack.
Yeah.
And, obviously, it puts Trump in a tough situation because he doesn't have any way to prove who really did it, because it was in a part of Syria where there isn't, the U.S. isn't there.
He has a way, but he won't accept it.
What's that?
Well, Sweden, for instance, has volunteered to come in and be a neutral party and inspect to see what really happened. And he said, no, they offered it to the United Nations, and the U.S. Vetoed it. They're not going to.
Okay, well, the problem that if the United Nations vetoed it, then how is Trump supposed to?
Nikki Haley vetoed it.
Yeah.
But what about all the other countries involved? What if they vetoed it? Because whoever did the gas attack isn't going to want
Well, I don't know about the other countries, but the U.S. didn't accept the proposal.
You know that Trump just started bombing Syria a few minutes ago.
Yeah, I just got the word in. Yeah, my friend Alan Reese from No Lies Radio, who hosts False Flag Weekly News, just emailed me and said Trump is now bombing Syria. So, Rolf, are you going to?
Of course,
we've been bombing Syria for
5 years. So,
we've been aerial support for the terrorists.
All this is a response to the gas attack. That's all.
And I have a brand new theory on that.
What's that?
That what the gas attack really means is that Trump himself had a gas attack, like bad gas.
He watches Fox News, eats junk food, drinks soda, and then I thought maybe Tucker Carlson had talked some sense into him, because 2 or 3 days ago, just as, you know, after Trump had uttered his insane tweet about how he was going to send shiny new cruise missiles into Syria, you know, smart missiles, watch out, Russia, here they come. And then Tucker Carlson did a great rant explaining why this was a false flag, or why we shouldn't believe the official story of this gas attack. And I figured that Trump was probably, you know, eating Doritos and drinking soda and having a gas attack himself when he saw that. And maybe Tucker Carlson had actually gotten to Trump, but now it looks like
Did you know that PolitiFact retroactively changed one of their facts? They went back from their 2014 fact that Syria doesn't have any chemical weapons, and they changed that fact to not a fact retroactively. So it's been a fact. It's been, according to PolitiFact, it's been a fact for 4 years, but now all of a sudden it is no longer a fact.
It's an unfact.
But it's a retroactive fact.
A non-fact.
So we're living in an Orwellian world.
It retroactively.
You know, they just banned any links to Veterans Today on Facebook, which means not only we can't post links to our stories anymore, but the literally probably millions of Facebook posts linking VT stories have all disappeared into a black hole in cyberspace. And you know why? Because just the other day, VT published an article fully exposing the fact that it's actually the rebels in Syria who, supported by U.S. and Israeli troops, have been staging these chemical weapons false flags. And we published pictures of the chemical weapons, pictures of the serial numbers traced to the factories in Germany and Grosse Pointe, Michigan, or not Grosse Pointe, where is it? West of Kalamazoo,
that was
Michigan.
Excellent.
Yeah. So, and then
I don't really know who did it, but I doubt if Assad did it. Said he didn't have any chemical.
The most credible story that I've read is that nobody did it. That that they set up those chemical weapons factories for the terrorists in East Ghouta, and then. But then the Syrian army came through so quickly and liberated that they didn't have time to mount an attack, and so the white helmets just wrote it up as if they had, and there actually wasn't any attack at all.
Yeah, I don't believe that either. But
most likely.
But I wanted to talk about the deep state. If you might have heard of it, the inspector general, part of the inspector in general. Report came out today, the IG report, that confirms that McCabe was a liar. You guys know that McCabe, Andrew McCabe of the FBI, is going to be charged with crimes very soon, you know.
Right,
did you know that?
Right.
He's going to be charged with crimes, and so is James Comey.
Yeah.
There's going to be more people charged. There's going to be more people charged than in Watergate, and higher level people than in Watergate.
How do we know this? What's the source?
I know it.
How do you know it?
I know it because I've been studying the facts. well, I can tell you. Okay, here's what I can tell you. Five top FBI agents are cooperating with a federal criminal prosecution that started last summer. The five FBI agents who are cooperating are Peter Stroke and Lisa Page.
Yeah.
Those are the two that sent all those text messages. James Baker, who is the chief legal counsel for the FBI, he's singing like a canary. He's the son of the famous James Baker. Bill Prieslap, who's another the top head of counterterrorism, and Bruce Orr, who was the guy who set up the Steele dossier, and his wife, who worked at GPS Fusion. All these people are cooperating with the FBI. And the first charges are going to be against McCabe. We know this because if you look at the report that came out today, the transcripts of his conversations aren't in the report. And the reason why the transcripts aren't there is because they're going to be used in the criminal prosecution.
Which is basically what Sean Hannity has been saying for months.
What has he been saying?
He's been talking to the... He's been saying that those people did just about what you said they did.
Oh yeah, but he never said they were going to be charged. That's what I'm saying.
No, he predicted that they'd all be charged.
Oh, he did. I haven't heard that he predicted that.
Oh, well, now you have a source, Rolf.
He has these two. One of them is. He has this woman, and there's this other.
Sarah Carter is a good source.
That's the woman, and this guy that is kind of teams up with her.
John Solomon is the other guy, and
they let people know before it hits the general.
They've been having good information, but I've moved far beyond what their information is.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Their information.
Right. So how does this relate to the accelerating pressure on Trump through the Mueller investigation, the raid on Trump's lawyer?
It's a public relations battle. That's why.
So are they all going to end up busted, and is Pence going to end up being president, or what?
Because there's nothing. Trump didn't do anything illegal. All the illegal activity is basically by the Democrats. Trump didn't do anything illegal.
And they projected the Russian collusion. The Democrats did the collusion, and they projected it on the Republicans to get the attention off of them.
There's another major leak in the Russian collusion probe that just came out a minute ago. Now they claim that Mueller has evidence that Cohen went to Prague in 2016. So they think that's
to meet with Mohammed Asta.
I don't know. They claim that someone from Russia secretly went to Prague, and Cohen secretly went to Prague. First of all, I worked on a lot of campaigns. If I had my lawyer go to Prague before the election, I don't think that would get me any votes. And when you collude on a campaign, you're supposed to get more votes. Okay, I don't know how sending Trump's lawyer to Prague, and even if he met some guy, some fat cat from Russia, and talked. Had a cigar and talked about politics. That is not going to get you any more votes. That's why Trump won in Wisconsin, because he actually campaigned in Wisconsin. Hillary Clinton didn't. Maybe Hillary Clinton was busy in Prague, because she certainly wasn't in Wisconsin.
Rolf, I think you're missing the whole story though about the way that the internet oligarchs may have tweaked the election. There's also, of course, reports that there was direct election fraud. I know you don't believe any of that, but there is evidence to show that there hasn't been an honest presidential election in the United States since at least 1996.
What state was this in? Because we did a recount in Wisconsin, which I participated in. I was an observer.
That was a bogus recount. That was a totally bogus recount. They didn't count the places that mattered, the places where there were more Trump votes. There were counties and precincts where there were more Trump votes than there were voters.
Not in Wisconsin.
Yeah, how about in the state of California, where there were about 3 million more votes, people registered to vote than there were eligible voters.
California was clearly a Clinton victory, so that's irrelevant. It's irrelevant.
It may be irrelevant, but the same thing happened in Detroit and a lot of large cities. Yeah.
Trump still won in Michigan.
He would have won by a lot more if it had been straight up election.
Okay, that's why the state. That's why we have the Electoral College. The founding fathers wanted the states in charge of elections, and frankly, if a state wants to let illegal aliens vote, they can actually do that. But here's the catch. They still get the same number of electoral votes. You don't get extra electoral votes if you let illegal aliens vote.
Yeah.
What you guys are both totally missing is the issue of black box vote hacking. Just as our minds are being hacked by the internet oligarchs who keep track of every single keystroke we ever make on our computers, every single phone call we ever make, run those words through artificial intelligence algorithms and can predict exactly who we are by profiling us, and they can figure out exactly how to push our buttons, what messages will make us vote for whom or buy which product. In the same way, they also can hack into voting machines and tweak election results. And you guys are living in the 19th century
before that happened. We have paper ballots in Wisconsin.
Okay. Kevin, they can hack into voting machines, but they've got to. This is what I've heard from supposed experts. I don't know if it's true, but they say that voting machines are not attached to the internet, so they'd have to hack them individually, each voting machine.
They can't just hack them from a central location. That's why we have paper ballots, so when you do a recount.
They can be hacked when they're manufactured.
I know, but we just did a recount in Wisconsin. There wasn't any black box hacking in
Wisconsin.
Because
they intentionally didn't count any of the precincts where Trump got more votes than
they counted
voters.
The whole state.
No, they did not. They counted a fraction of the state.
I may be naive, but I think the actual solution is to turn our elections over to Canada and let them run them, because they seem to know how.
The founding fathers would turn in their grave if they heard such a suggestion.
And counted paper ballots is the only way to go.
Well,
like
we
in
can
Iran.
Count paper ballots as well. Canada, all I'm saying
the,
is that they have the right
count. This did a hand count in Wisconsin. What more do you want? We did a hand count. And Trump picked up about 150 votes or something like that.
Okay.
After they did.
Do you have paper ballots?
One of my friends actually found three votes for Clinton.
Do you have paper ballots in Wisconsin?
Yeah, we have it everywhere.
Oh, great. That should be the model for everywhere then.
Okay, but wait a second, Ralph. It's true. There, I believe there's a paper trail in Wisconsin for all votes. However, you're not guaranteed that the levers you pull come out with the right paper. But the more interesting thing is that in this case, that recount, I challenge you to document this. This was not a recount of every single vote in Wisconsin, and I will stake my life on that.
It was
a recount that only got part of
it.
You're saying that every single piece of paper, every single ballot.
Every ballot. They found a few. Every once in a while they find a bag of like 100 ballots somewhere that weren't counted, but it didn't really affect anything.
I thought we were talking about my website.
Well, we were for a while there. Okay, so that's the alternative media. So, Rolf, James Hufford has a website called 911grassroots.org, which is it now has turned into not just a 911 grassroots organizing effort, but it also features various stories culled from the alternative media. And we're talking about how this popularity that he's built up there with now over a million reads total is a sign of how the alternative media is starting to make its presence felt, and how the powers that be are now pushing back against alternative media with censorship. YouTube is deleting so many accounts now. Veterans Today just got banned from Facebook, and Gordon Duff was also banned from YouTube, along with so many other people. Even the big operations are getting banned. The Health Ranger, Mike Adams was banned. He has a pretty big operation. Richie Allen was banned from YouTube. So there's a huge, heavy-handed ham fist of YouTube censorship and of internet censorship coming down, clobbering the alternative media. Obviously, that means that we must be doing something right, and they must be running scared.
Well, I predict that my website is going to be taken down at some point. I don't know when, but websites
you want to place bets on when it gets taken down?
Well, we could do that. Maybe talk to Hillary Clinton. She seems to be good at setting up betting on things like that, on particular targets of the CIA are going to be hit and so on.
So we're talking about the digest of alternative media, of which 9/11 grassroots is one. So, Rolf, what
let me talk about YouTube.
Best, you know, let's talk about what are the best websites where you can go to get a good selection from the alternative media. What do you think, Ralph?
I like Breitbart News, InfoWars, and Drudge Report.
Oh my goodness!
Conservative Tree.
Oh my goodness! Conservative Kosher Tree Nostra. House. They're all Kosher Nostra. You're being brainwashed.
No, they're not. And yeah, also, the Conservative Treehouse is really good.
Well, oh, I like Information Clearinghouse. That's a good one. What's it called? The one in Phoenix. That's pretty good. Freedom's Phoenix. That's pretty good.
Okay.
I like Activist Post. That's pretty good. It's not very long. They don't have too many articles, but it's good for what they have.
For the sort of right wing, you know, sites, you mentioned Breitbart, which I think is for morons. InfoWars is for a slightly more aware breed of moron. If you like that stuff, Ron Unz at Unz.com is putting out a vastly better product than those guys.
Breitbart is more for like inside Republican politics, that sort of thing.
But Breitbart is really good.
I get some things from that.
Breitbart. I mean, every now and then they have something okay, but it's really they're aiming at like, you know, 2-digit room temperature IQ. You know,
Here's a really good one. It's Inside Russia. That's a really good one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the Russian alternative.
The Daily Caller. A lot of articles. The Daily Caller is really good, by the way. Uh-huh. That's a really good one.
This is all Republican Party brainwashing for not.
Right. Hey, you want to know what the best news really, source is?
Don't you watch libertarian stuff anymore?
That's because we got because Trump is implementing a pro liberty agenda.
Oh, man. Trump is dumbing people like down.
He's taking up the deep state. Okay, you can't have a libertarian society or a pro-liberty society if you have an anti-liberty mass media controlling society. So what Trump is doing is he's destroying the corrupt core of the mass media, which is ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, Washington Post, Associated Press, New York Times, and a few others. He's destroying their market share, and that leads to more liberty for all, because these people have been controlling ever since JFK was killed and the New York Times decided a lone nut did it. We've been controlled by this small cartel of powerful news agencies, and finally Trump has been able to break the barrier. So everything's going to be set up in 2024 for President Rand Paul to take the torch from Trump. And then continue the revolution. Remember, revolutions take a while.
That's an interesting view, actually, and I hope you're right.
I'm sure that it'll happen. They call me Ralph Stradamus. Some people.
Okay. Well, you know, there's something to that, Ralph. I think you're on to something. You know, Trump is both a symptom and a cause of the erosion of trust and power that the alternative media have been, or sorry, the mainstream media have been misusing for so long. You know, I just saw this film, The Post, you know, this Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks made by Steven Spielberg lionizing The Washington Post, busting open the Pentagon Papers. And that was as interesting for what it didn't show as what it did show. There were little hints that Ben Bradley, the editor of The Washington Post, knew that his very close friend John F. Kennedy had been murdered as a part of a coup d'etat. But Spielberg, of course, doesn't really go there. He just drops a couple of little hints. But it portrayed the Washington Post and the New York Times as heroic, liberal crusaders for justice. And so, Rolf, you're telling us that's not exactly the case.
Okay, I haven't seen the Post yet, although I do intend to see it. I don't know why I didn't see it in the theater, but as soon as it's out on DVD, I'm gonna
in the cheap theater now. It's in Market Square Cinemas in Madison, Wisconsin for like $3 or something. You should go see it.
It is? Okay. Well, I might go see it, but otherwise I'm going to get it. It'll be on DVD probably pretty soon. But I also watched The Unabomber on DVD. That was pretty good. I didn't know that he was under the MK Ultra program of the CIA.
Harvard. There's a book called Harvard and the Unabomber. Harvard and the Unabomber. Check it out, man.
Amazing how that happened.
At Harvard University. Poor guy, man. He was a brilliant 180 IQ math kid who
I was a math major too. Me and him were both math majors, so
cool.
Luckily I didn't turn out that bad. Well, you might be the next Harvard. Of course, I was never subjected to MK Ultra either.
Yeah, they broke him down. You know, he was at Harvard, he was like 15 or 16 or something at Harvard. You know, they dragged him from the slums of Chicago to Harvard, where he felt socially very inept and outclassed. And then they put him in this MK Ultra thing. He signed up for an experiment. He didn't know what it was. And they had a third year law student shine a bright light into his eyes after he'd written his philosophy of life. And his third year law student just destroyed his ego by telling him what an asshole he was, what a stupid philosophy of life he had. So it was like a hostile interrogation designed to totally break you down by telling you that you're a complete schmuck. Mm-hmm. And they did this to him, you know, systematically, and he probably never recovered from it. This is what we know. I mean, maybe they did more stuff that we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know everything.
Yeah. So Ted Kaczynski had a chip on his shoulder, and it's obvious, you know.
There's actually a lot of really, like, so-called geniuses in, like, one particular, they kind of go off the deep end, like people like Nietzsche, and, you know, there have been others that have done it. Well, I think Mozart kind of went off the deep end.
Yeah. I think he was right in certain respects in terms of his philosophy. If you read his manifesto, a lot of it is pretty much right on. But why that would justify, you know, sending letter bombs that are going to blow the hands off of secretaries, I don't understand that part.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Anyways, getting back to Trump and all this stuff, the biggest threat to liberty is the New York Times, the Alphabet Networks, the Washington Post, and they're losing their market share. And, you know, did you know that television commercials by the year 2022, TV commercials are only going to be about 25% of political campaign advertising?
It's going to be Facebook pulling our strings and pushing our buttons.
I want to comment on your being. You said you were banned on YouTube. The first thing you need to do is there needs to be. I don't know. I don't use YouTube myself, but there's got to be other places that show videos besides YouTube. You have to decentralize. Now, if the government, what Zuckerberg is trying to do right now is get government regulation of social media. Because if there's government regulation, then these giant companies will keep their cartels in place. But if we can keep a free market, then there's no
free market. Yeah, they have monopolies. They all have de facto monopolies.
Anybody can set up a website.
They can be busted up by the antitrust division.
Anybody can set up a website to do what YouTube does. Or Facebook.
No, they have advantages that can make sure that you'll always stay small and they'll dominate the market. That's why the Justice Department needs to revive the antitrust division and bust up all these monopolies.
Yeah, that doesn't work because guess what? The lawyers, remember Zuckerberg's lawyers are meeting with the Senate every day of the week. So even though he gets grilled by him for a few days on TV, but he's got his lawyer. Did you know that Silicon Valley spends more money on lobbying now than the large banking cartels? Did you know that?
That's interesting, yeah.
And by the way,
I think we basically have two choices. We either have to bust up these companies as monopolies, or we have to seize them and operate them as public utilities subject to the First Amendment. And I think that's actually an even better idea.
That would be a disaster. I noticed, by the way, that all these public – notice that these big companies, Silicon Valley and the big banks, they all supported Clinton in the presidential election. And they whoever the Democrats put up in the next election, they will be just supporting the Democratic candidate, unless, of course, somehow Bernie Sanders gets through. Because Trump is not making friends with any of the – with Silicon Valley or the large banking cartels. And he's been attacking Jeff Bezos recently, if you haven't noticed that, too.
Well, that's interesting because Jeff Bezos is the only internet oligarch who isn't owned and operated by Israel. Google is Israel.
Yeah, but he owns and operates
Facebook.
He's got Jennifer Rubin writing columns for the Washington Post. It's the worst. They get all these leaks. You know how many leaks the Washington Post gets? They might get more than the New York Times now.
Of course, that's their job. But that's what we do as journalists. We publish leaks. But we're not going to publish any more leaks tonight on Truth Jihad Radio because we hit the end of the hour. The world is still here. The nuclear weapons aren't going off quite yet. But hopefully we'll get through tonight and into the next week and be back here next Friday for another Truth Jihad Radio live show. Well, thank you very much, James Hufford and Rolf Lindgren. It's been great talking with you, and look forward to more conversation down the line, inshallah.
Thank you. It was a great time.
All right. Take care, guys.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, the website is Truth Jihad.